Hello, magic seekers, and welcome to It Turns Out She's a Witch.
We're your hosts, Laura and Shannon,
and welcome to our podcast coven. To our beautiful podcast coven. We are back for another episode of Turns Out She's a Witch, and we just had an amazing interview that we're going to just do a little precursor to, because that's what we do now.
Yeah, we're going to introduce our wonderful interview and our wonderful guest without them being in the room with us, just so we can reflect on our wonderful time with them and tell you a bit about the episode straight after we've completed the interview. And Rhiannon entertains our inquiries and our questions and our, you know, topics that we want to cover, because she's so knowledgeable herself. So I really enjoyed sitting with Rhiannon, both recording and off recording, because we could literally speak to her for days on all kinds of things. And I kind of feel as though we did. But, yeah, it's a really cool episode that we delved into loads of practical magic applications, would you say, Shannon?
Absolutely, a bit of everything. We did daily magic if you're busy with kids, yeah. How you can incorporate kids into your magical practices. We spoke about sex magic. We spoke about...
We got sexy.
We did get sexy and a bit giggly.
That's true, yeah.
And we also spoke about micro enhancements.
Enchantments.
Well, I just stuffed that up again.
This was the same issue that I had when I was trying to read out that question. And I'm sure, Ree, as you're listening back to this, it's like true to form. We did not get it right the first time when we did our interview.
Enchantments.
Yeah.
Micro enhancements sounds like some kind of plastic surgery, doesn't it?
Oh, well, it could be.
Could be. Related to sex magic, perhaps.
It could be. Well, I think it kind of makes sense, because you are, like, you're setting that, you know, you're enhancing whatever it is, as Rhiannon goes on to explain, but it really is more magical. So calling it micro enchantments is like even one step on from a micro enhancement, one may say.
It is. So we hope you enjoy this episode ahead. We loved our time with Rhiannon, and yeah, we hope you do too.
Absolutely. And one last thing that Rhiannon had offline was putting together a wee confessionals podcast episode. So if you have a little confessional or anonymous story that has anything to do with the magical witchy world, or perhaps some interesting personalities that you may have come across whilst walking the path, feel free to hit us up with your little stories, and we can read them out, and we're going to compile them into an entire episode, and we will not mention names, and we can have a little giggle with everyone about various experiences that we have had.
Mm. Yeah. We're going to call it The Confessions of a Witch.
Yeah. And full credit goes to Ree for that suggestion.
Yes, because we were, I think everyone's got a story.
Yes.
Everyone's got a story. So, write in. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah, so Shannon, real quick, so everyone can hear this. Is it best to contact us on the Instagram DMs, or is there also an email that we could use?
Either. Yeah, feel free to slide on into my inbox.
It's like the sex magic question all over again.
Oh, my gosh. We're really hungry right now. We haven't had lunch yet. And
it's just recording day. And Chloe has literally smashed us at our fitness class this morning as well.
True. So, yes, feel free to DM on Instagram or email. Probably the best email is infobloom, like the flower, BLOOM, at bigpond.com. You can get me there. Daily, I'm always checking it. So, we'd love to hear your tales. Tell us a juicy story.
Yes. And it will be anonymous, so you can pop that in the subject heading as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anonymous confessions.
Of a witch.
Yay. All right, enjoy the interview. Turns Out She's a Witch podcast would like to begin today by acknowledging the Dharkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which we live and record the podcast. And we pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
We are delighted to be back with you this week with one of our favourite repeat guests who is brimming with occult wisdom. We are excited to be able to delve into many more magical topics with her. Our guest established the online business, The Spiritual Toolbox, in 2016 and opened her store in Hurstville a year ago. She's become a trusted source of ethically produced metaphysical items, witchcraft tools, and practitioner-made products. She's a qualified metaphysical practitioner, aromatherapist, and astrologer, and someone who has deep esoteric wisdom and that she shares online via the School of Magic. Please welcome back to the podcast, Rhiannon Hazim. Thank you so much for joining us again and letting us pick your brain.
Hey, thank you for having me back. I love coming on here. So much fun.
We love having you. Before we hit record, it was like, we've got to actually record a podcast because we've been here for hours just chatting.
So many good things to chat about.
Absolutely. Oh, yes. So it was hard to know what questions to narrow it down for this interview, as I have so many topics I wish to learn more about. But through our emails, I'm excited to delve into a few very interesting ones today. So let's start with your recent 7-month Hecate course you recently did with Jason Miller. I love that you're always seeking more knowledge and forever the student, even though you are an amazing teacher. What did you take away the most from it?
Oh, gosh, I would say my biggest takeaway is that there is so much to be said for maintaining discipline and daily practice, especially if you're wanting results, like just put in the work. So the entire course was an absolute roller coaster. Mm-hmm. Like each lesson builds upon the previous ones, and then between every lesson there's a Q&A.
Test?
No, like a question and answer where you can actually message Jason.
Oh, like a live. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sitting exams.
No. Just like where you get to answer questions to clarify what it is you've learned, because there are times where I was looking at what I was supposed to be learning and I'm like, what is this? So there's like a daily minimum requirement, which is 100 recitations of a mantra. Wow. And if you don't do the 100, then you have to do 1,000. So I learned very quickly to maintain the 100.
Wow.
And that's to maintain the link between my practice and Hecate. And so like just when you thought you were getting the hang of it, a new layer gets thrown in it and then you're like, oh crap, here we go again. So yeah, it's a lot of integration, a lot of discipline that would be, but I highly recommend it. It's a really great course. It was very foundational and it built a sense of connection that I never actually thought I could achieve. So it's like that meme where the dog is sitting in the room full of fire with a coffee cup going, this is fine. Like that's that's the Hecate course with Jason Miller. Like amazing, but it's a roller coaster.
Yeah, not the faint-hearted.
No, because you've got to put in the work to maintain a level of connection, but also to achieve the results that you go in looking for. So it really works. You just have to do it.
Yeah. It's up to what you put in, right?
Exactly.
Wow.
And even though like you are an amazing teacher and so full of knowledge, but I love that you continue to further your studies. And I don't know about you, but I know myself when I sign up for things, it's being accountable. Like if there's someone there that's going, right, you have to do this by this date, I do it, because otherwise things just slide and weeks turn into months and I haven't, you know, done the practices that I set out to do. So I don't know if that's something that, you know, you can resonate with.
But. Oh, absolutely. It's so important to, be accountable for yourself, have the discipline to do what needs to be done, but also enjoy it.
It
shouldn't feel like a chore.
Or quite often I feel like if I haven't shown up 100%, I just ripped myself a new one rather than just sitting with it and sort of, you know, having compassion for yourself. It's like, fucking hell, failed again.
Well, the good thing with Jason's course is he actually lets you retake subsequent runs of it at no extra charge. So you can jump into the next one and, you know, if you've stopped at one point, you can sort of pick up where you've left off. And,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, so you could, if you signed up to one, there's no limit to how many more you can do, which I really like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not cheap, so I get that. Yep. That makes it worth it.
Yeah, that's right. Not all is lost.
Exactly.
Rhiannon, I love this next topic we're going to delve into, which is daily practices for busy mums when we're talking about discipline and falling short sometimes. So can you share more on this with our listeners?
Yeah, of course. So I've got three kids of my own and time often gets away from me. So one of the biggest things that I do is I try to wake up like 20 minutes earlier if I can, just to write down my dreams. And like, I'm a Pisces moon and rising, so a lot happens in the astral most nights, but I'm also a Taurus sun. So anything I can do from bed is a massive bonus.
Okay.
So yeah, waking up a little bit earlier, but then once I've come from the dream state, I'm consciously like wriggling my feet, my ankles, my knees, like my hips, and then just consciously being back in my body. Otherwise, I feel like a part of me still is wandering around. So it's a way that I can ground myself before I even, you know, set foot on the ground in the morning. And another thing is I used to always write my weekly intentions out, but I don't often get time to do that anymore. So what I've been doing is I will charge my first cup of water that I drink in the morning with an intention or an affirmation, because water holds vibration and it has a memory. So I just cup my hands over my glass and I speak my intention, you know, in a present tense, and spend a few moments focusing on what I want that water to fill me up with, whether it's, you know, love, gratitude, abundance, happiness, health, if I'm feeling a bit run down. And then I drink it. So then I'm drinking that energy. And I feel like, you know, my kids are doing that now too. They've seen me do it. They're like, why are you speaking to your water? I'm like, because you need to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I can.
Yeah. And then obviously when I shower, I visualize all negative energy going down the drain. Like, that's a really simple one. And I also draw sigils on my skin with oils or my face cream or face oil or whatever, if I'm needing a little extra pick me up for the day.
Really, really is like supercharging the actions that you're already doing. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Making it more mindful and more intentional.
Exactly. Mm. Even if you were like stir your coffee with an intention or your tea, really basic stuff, but we overlook it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's powerful.
I agree.
I know we did an episode last season on the magic of water and the rice experiment. So, you know, for any of our listeners that heard that, like, it just shows you how powerful intent is with especially water. It's amazing. So, yeah, I love that. I'm going to start doing that. I haven't done the intention in the glass of water. That's
Even if simple, I can just do one glass of water a day, then that's better than, you know, better than nothing.
Yeah.
Because I wake up, I go to the bath, go to the kitchen, then I drink my water, then I go to the bathroom. So it's just like, it's a habit now. So charge it on my way.
And it's that repetition, isn't it? It's that layering on and doing it day after day. And love it. Top tip.
Yeah. And setting the energy for the day ahead. It's huge, isn't it? Now, do you have any suggestions on how we can include our kids in some of our witchy tasks?
Yeah, I mean, on the grand scheme of things, I think we sort of already do when we, you know, tell our kids to make a wish as we're blowing a dandelion or blowing out our birthday cakes. Like, that's a low-key witchcraft. But also, like, discussing and watching the moon phases, talking about the dreams that they've maybe had the night before, bringing in gratitude practice, like, what's the best thing that happened to you today, and getting them to help you make safe blends of oils. I emphasize the safe here because there's a lot of disinformation out there. And then having like a family altar where if they've been to the park and they found a really cool rock, that they can bring that home and put it on the altar. And that's a really cool space to work towards, you know, culminating a sense of joy and like something that they can look forward to. Because my kids do that all the time.
and be a part of. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I love that, especially the park items and that, and how it introduces them to the various elements and the various yes. sort of associations with each one, because they're all
having reverence for yeah. the things that they find and the trees that are growing and asking permission before they take it. And mm-hmm. those little things that, yeah, we can just do to enforce upon our growing children, and hopefully they can make the world a better place, because we need it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and give them more of a stable grounding for it, you know, just building that so they can return to that. So mm-hmm. foundational.
Mm. Yep.
Oh, it's my turn. I could talk to you all the time. Got to look at my question. Oh, yeah, this is good. So we were talking about different spaces. So what are some ways we can implement home and hearth magic within our spaces?
First and foremost, I think that all homes should include an offering and an introduction to the spirits of the land and the traditional Indigenous caretakers of the land that we reside on. So because our land is very, for lack of a better word, massacred, so we have a very spiritually dense land that is upon us. So I just think that if you take some time, introduce yourself, even if there's no spirits there, it's still nice. There's still, you know, energetic spirits like tree spirits, dryads, all of those things around, where we can just say, hey, I'm here. I'm part of this little bit of land. I'm here to take care of the land, and this is my offering to you to help me do the same, or, you know, whatever it is. But then, you know, other things that you can do in your physical home is to have a witch's bottle or a ward, and you can hang it or bury it in your front yard. We do a lot of simmer pots in our house, and that's just to radiate out a beautiful aroma as well as the intention of whatever it's for. But the biggest, this is not even a witchcraft thing, but I'm going to throw it in here because it came to mind. When I feel like the vibe needs to shift in my house, I put on Christmas movies, like those cheesy storyline, happy ending story. Like
predictable.
predictable. Nothing happens, but it feels nice. And I think that that's a really good way to shift the energy within your home, but also pay attention to what you are watching, because maybe that's bringing in energy that you don't want, like watching murder mysteries or in like violent shows, and that could be putting something within your home that you don't want there, like energetically, that vibration.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I think we've got to be really mindful of what we're consuming through either, television, news, what you're reading, what you're watching, what you're listening to. It's so important. And I think it's something we overlook a lot. You just kind of mindlessly scroll through Netflix and, I think some people are obviously more sensitive than others. I'm definitely on the sensitive scale over here. I couldn't even watch Game of Thrones. I got like two seasons in. I was like, I can't do this. I'm having like full-on anxiety attacks before I'm going to bed after watching it. So
you had a lot on.
I did.
It's pretty hectic though, I must say. It's like
if you can detach your TV from your life, then that's a good thing. But if you can't, if you get really invested in something, then I would suggest not investing in anything that's going to throw off your energy.
I've learned that. I've really got to prep myself to watch movies. Like my 16-year-old's never seen Titanic, and I'm like, I'll watch it with you. I'm just not ready right this. I'm like, right now, I can't do it right now. I'll let you know. I'll let you know when I'm ready. I'm prepped.
My husband's like that with The Notebook. I'm like, can we just watch it? And he's like, no, not yet.
I held off watching that movie for so long because I was certain I'd get super, super emotional, because I do about everything most of the time. But I watched it. I was just like, that is like beautiful. I wasn't sort of in tears and sobbing about it, which was.
I cried watching Clifford when he got sent on the boat, and I was I was not ready for that.
I'm picturing that at the end of Bluey episode sometimes. It's ridiculous.
We just feel deeply.
Yes. I remember going when I was in high school, I took drama classes, and that actually really helped sort of disconnect from being hook, line and sinker in a drama movie, because I felt if I was getting really, you know, emotionally sort of invested, I'd sort of semi become conscious of that and then look for something in there. Oh, that's how they've made me feel that way. Or that's what's going on with that character, just to try and disengage that. Mm. I don't know. Yep. It's really weird. But yeah, I just realized that that happened as soon as I did a bit of drama, and you learn a bit how to construct scenes and whatnot. So yeah.
That's so interesting.
It was. It's helpful.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, Ree, why do you think it's important for us to do magical workings around our homes, aside from the obvious one being protection magic?
I mean, for the most part, I think our home is our sanctuary, or should be anyway, and it helps us get familiar with, I guess, sensing energy, particularly if there's a change to the atmosphere. So, like, we can achieve a better magical practice and outcome if we are already comfortable within our surroundings. So the more magic you do, the more comfortable you're going to feel, and therefore your magic is going to be more efficient.
Yeah,
that's what I think anyway.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I think also too, as you said, being aware of that change. Like, I know myself in my home, yeah, you can feel it when something's a bit off. Maybe someone's been over who maybe might have brought something, you know, in with them that wasn't so great. Or another thing too, I've noticed, if my protection magic needs a bit of a reboot and a bit of a zhuzh, you know, things might start going awry. Or my dog usually is the first one to sense if, you know, things are kind of getting low in the protection. So he'll just start barking at random things and growling at the door and stuff like that when there's no one there. And I'm like, okay, it's time to. But as you say, it's just being aware of the energy change. Mm.
Exactly.
All right, Ree, please share with us what micro enhancements are and why we would use them and how we can incorporate them into our daily lives.
Okay, so micro enchantments are one of my favourite ways.
Enchantments, sorry.
That's okay. I know what you're talking about.
I typed enhancements. Sorry.
Yeah, so they're micro enchantments. Yes. So they're one of my favourite ways to improve my magical outcomes, because what it is, you're taking a larger goal or spell and breaking it down into much smaller chunks and then tackling the details with a multifaceted approach. Like, for example, if my goal was to get a new job, I could work with the planet Jupiter instead of just, you know, doing a spell for I'm going to get a job. Yeah. It's going to be working with Jupiter for the expansion of opportunities within the job market. Then I might embed a sigil as a transparent layer over my resume to make my resume feel like the most attractive one on the pile for other people reading it. Then I might do a candle spell around Saturn to demonstrate my strong work ethic. Then I could do a glamour spell at my interview and wear the colours, like the colour correspondences to that align with whatever job it is, to make sure that my energy is like on point. I might wear a consecrated ring on my dominant hand to show whoever it is, or to instill confidence within the team leader or manager or whoever it is that I'm interviewing with, to like that I'm the best person for this job. And then I could potentially invoke the sun to appear radiant and like the most appealing candidate. I could petition to the patron Saint Joseph and asking me to give me work so that I may share my talents with others. It depends on if you work with deities or not. But yeah, so it's a more of a strategic mindset at, just tackling the facets along the way instead of just the end goal.
So practical.
Yeah.
It is.
I love that. And it makes so much sense.
I feel like they're better results. I don't know, like just my own practice.
And I guess, you know, with a new job, depending, you know, on how particular, like if it is a certain role you've got your eye on, or if it's sort of somewhere that you want to end up but you're not quite sure what that looks like, would depend on what micro enchantment you're using along the way, because some would be I'd imagine super specific and others would just be, you know, moving you into alignment for perhaps.
Exactly.
But you did say something about wearing a consecrated ring on your dominant hand. Now, what mm-hmm. finger, or is it not that
Well, specific? It could be, it can be fingers, because each of our fingers have, it's connected with a planetary energy.
Right.
But there are different schools of thought on which finger it is for you. But I did a thing with my friend Angie. We were talking about which fingers were the right ones because it just made more sense. I feel like the pointer finger could be Mercury, which is communication and speech.
Right.
And so mm-hmm. I would be using it on my Mercury finger because I would want to come across as being confident, being able to be clear and concise and having quick mental thought processes to answer questions. So, and your dominant hand, because that is the hand that you send energy with. If it's on your non-dominant hand, that is your, like, receiving hand. So that's when you get energy sent to you.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Just thinking of the different fingers I wear rings on when I'm at work, and if I'm at work and I'm around, like, or doing tasks, or I'm around people where I feel like I need a bit of extra sort of shielding or protection, quite often I'll wear a smoky quartz on my ring finger on my right hand. I'm not sure what that correlates with when you actually break it down and look at it. I mean, it fits on that finger. So that's where it goes. But I wonder, you know, it just makes me wonder what that means.
That could be a fun little experiment to work out which finger it feels best on.
That's right. Yeah. When you know more, you do things slightly differently, hey?
You do. Exactly. Look at everything. I think that's with witchcraft, isn't it? You just look at everything so much more deeply and the meanings behind it. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
And I love that about, tackling things from many different angles. And as you were saying, like candle magic and, you know, jewelry magic and all sorts of, you know, planetary. And it's self-empowering as well along the way of trying to get your outcome. Mm-hmm.
And if you get like to a certain point where you're like, actually, I don't like where this is going, you can change it. So you're not focused on the end goal. You just focus on the next step.
That's right.
Yeah, true. Very true. You can pivot.
Pivot.
Yes.
Had to be said.
Had to.
Sorry.
Now, one topic that gets brought up a lot, and I know you don't mind talking about taboo subjects, so let's get into sex magic. First of all, what is it aside from the very obvious?
So sex magic is one of my favorite topics, and I enjoy talking about it mostly because there's a lot of disinformation out there, and there's people that sell programs and courses, and like at its core, it's not that hard. Like, it's really not. It's a lot harder to master it, but it's very easy to practice it. Mm-hmm. So sex magic is the intentional raising and channeling of orgasmic energy, which is then directed or discharged towards a specific intention or purpose. And what makes it so beneficial, aside from the obvious, is that you can actually feel the energy being built up, which is a side of magic that I believe is really overlooked in witches. For example, like if going back to candle spells, lots of people would get their candle, anoint it maybe with a bit of oil and herbs, light the candle, then let it burn down. Boom, done. But what the spell is actually missing is the raising of energy towards whatever it is the candle represents, and then directing that energy somewhere. So a candle is only going to provide a really basic level of sustenance towards your outcome, but you haven't actually put any effort into it, which is why I believe that spells fail. So again, you don't need an orgasm to raise energy. You can do breath work, you can do vibration, like sound vibration, dancing, visualization. But I mean, it's the more enjoyable way.
Don't let it go to waste.
Exactly.
Oh, I was waiting for your comments to start, Laura.
I had to stop taking notes. But it really goes along with a course we're doing with Stacey, and she has us every morning drawing energy up from the earth and then bringing it down. You know, it just makes so much sense that when you are able to work with it and use it and direct it, as you say, that's where the power is.
You can feel the energy, and it's obviously you feel it a lot quickly, I guess, than sitting there doing breath work. And I don't know. I think it's a really easy way to create energy because we are created from the act of sex. So that is true. Like inherently an act of creation.
It's perfect. Makes perfect sense.
It does. And is there any particular, like, I know with like moon phases, you've got your, you know, release rituals at the full moon and you're manifesting at, you know, the new moon and protection at the dark moon. Would you do the same with sex?
You could.
At those times? On,
yeah, you could. So when you are raising energy, it is good for anything that you want to raise energy for and put somewhere. So if you, like, yeah, you could use it for protection magic, but, like, would you really want to, like, maybe you would. I don't know. Everyone's different. But if you were to want, I don't know, draw in an opportunity or a book deal or whatever, then you would be raising energy for that goal and intention and then putting it into something like a talisman or a candle or a spell jar or yourself or your working altar or out into the universe.
That makes sense.
I guess that goes along with my next question is, when would you suggest we use sex magic and do you need to have a partner to do so?
So sex magic is something that can be done alone with a partner or if you're feeling particularly adventurous in a group setting. Wow. But whilst you can have an absolutely wild time, I'd strongly urge discernment when choosing a partner or partners because you'll want somebody that, one, consents and, two, understands the concept of what you're doing and can stay focused and on target with you. But in terms of when, I mean, whenever you want.
Where does the moon have to be?
Yeah. So people think that sex magic is only for love rituals. Like, it's really not. So think of it like a battery. Like, what are you charging? What do you want to, what do you want manifested? Because like we just said before, you know, the act of sex is a, in a sense, procreation. It's the masculine and the feminine combining whether, like, we've got masculine and feminine polarities within us. So it's
each individual. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's the aspects of self. And I know that Donald Michael Craig is an author and magician, and he wrote something in his Modern Magic book, because I remember reading it. It's this massive, gigantic, oversized book relating to the concept of sex magic and that the thoughts that form during the act of sex magic create a magical child, like not a, inherently an actual child, but the seed of an intention. So I just thought that that makes sense because you're creating something, whether like a child or an intention. So it just, it just makes sense that that concept is legit. I don't know.
And the creation of more energy rather than using, say, universal energy that's already there.
Or draining, like, yourself. Because often we do drain ourselves and we'll do rituals and then we'll be so tired afterwards because we haven't actively raised enough energy to sustain what it is we're wanting.
To use, Important reminders, and it's easy to let it slip, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and then you could go like a step further and you can also like you can see I like talking about this.
You're the little school kid going, let it slip.
Sorry.
You're all good. You can use the energetically charged fluids from sex magic and then use that to charge talismans and ritual tools, and maybe you want to collect it and save some for later or gift it to a deity that you're working with. Or
You said gift it to a deity, not someone, like, suspecting.
No. So, like, the act of sex magic, you would be doing it in honour of a deity.
Mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense. Yeah.
So then they're receiving the energy.
So would Tantra be a style or type of sex magic, or is that entirely different, or can they sometimes work together?
Yeah, so Tantra is, in its whole, Tantra is more than sex magic.
Yeah.
But it is a part of the act of sex magic because it's all about raising that energy from the base and going up the spine. And, you know, it's like Kundalini. It's that same process of you know, something nested that's growing and going higher and higher. And yeah, if you're really good at visualizing, maybe you can visualize the energy going up your spine and up through your, you know, your heart, your throat, your third eye, your crown, up and out into the universe. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is, I've researched Tantra. I've done a few courses on it, but I just, there's something missing because I think it's been whitewashed a lot. The concepts are there, but I need to go keep digging further back, I think, to really find where it stems from at its core.
Yeah.
But that's going deep.
True.
Yeah.
True. X magic isn't that hard. You don't need to go that deep.
Yeah.
And it's another.
Depends what you're into.
Oh, yeah. You might like.
All right. There we go. Let's move on.
I was waiting for it.
Sorry.
It's so much worse.
I really was trying to behave myself.
You did well. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
No, but I'm glad we could talk about it because it is something that, you know, most people do a lot, and it's another tool that can be harnessed, another energy.
I know. And it's like, don't waste it. Utilize it.
Yeah.
But like you were saying also, having that consent from the partner, if you're working with a partner, because otherwise it'd be a little bit bizarre if you're doing it in a way that's kind of noticeable when you're orgasming and you're actually then doing something else.
Or if you've got like sigils placed all over the room.
And yeah. And this other person's like, what the fuck? Have that conversation prior.
Yes, definitely have the conversation prior.
Yes.
Yeah, or if you're solo, I suppose anything goes, right?
Yeah, true.
Exactly.
So much to think about. Love it. Okay, reset. As you know, on the podcast, we have a divine tool of the week each episode to share with our listeners. Is there anything in particular that you love working with in ritual at the moment?
Yeah, so I wrote down a few notes with like my other questions that you were asking me, but for this one I kept blank because I'm like, I always use the same tools. And then this morning my husband's like, oh, your balm dropped behind the bed. And I'm like, my balm. It's a flying balm that I made and I've been using it all the time and I fully forgot that I was using it as a tool. But basically it is a oil infusion of mugwort, lavender, yarrow, wormwood, bay leaves, and a smidge of a few of my special garden plants on the hallucinogenic side. just a little bit. So I steeped that into a balm and I've been using that on my third eye every single night just to see, as a little science experiment, to see if my like astral adventures are more consistent, if I can control them a little bit better, or, you know, just to see what happens. I find that it's helping me lift off a lot quicker. Like I'm not so in my thoughts before bed, but I can sort of get there into the astral a lot easier. And I sleep better with it. I don't know if it's the lavender in it, maybe. But yeah, my divine tool of the week is my flying balm.
I love that. Can't get much more witchy than that, just saying.
Sounds really good. So when you're doing your flying overnight, do you have total recall?
Mostly I do. Generally I will have a lot of recall. If I don't, then I'll get glimpses of it during my day. And oh my God, that's what I dreamt about. But 9 times out of 10, I've got full recall. And even during my dream, I'm aware that I'm in a dream.
Yeah.
So I've had a dream recently. It turned a bit messed up, but it was one of my dogs that passed away, and she was on my daughter's bed. And in the dream, I'm like, wait, I know you already died, but you're on her bed. I'm like, what are you doing here? Obviously talking to the dog, but she didn't respond. But I just hugged her in the dream and I was like, I love that she came to visit me in my dream because I really needed that. And then it turned into something that was a bit messed up. So
wow.
I don't know what happened there, but yeah, so
I change it, or you're just witnessing?
Yeah, no, there's been moments where I've come up to open a door and I've opened the door and I'm consciously like, I'm in a dream, I'm going to close that door, I'm not going there. And then I'll decide to like go down the hallway or whatever it is. And most times I can control it. If not, I'll wake up, but then I'll be able to get back into that place or state. Mostly it's still a work in progress. But I love to work in the astral because it's like an untapped potential.
Mm. And like, do you wake up feeling
so much time?
Yeah.
It's true. We do, don't we? Yeah. Like what, a third of our lives pretty much is asleep. So
I'm going to use it.
Yeah.
Of course you are a multitasking mama.
Definitely.
Using your orgasms, using your sleep time, your water.
Water, that's it. Oh, yeah. It's all the basics.
It's all the
water,
exactly.
Sleep, sex.
Yeah.
What do you need? I would love to ask before we move on, in regards to astral travel and using your flying balm, do you do protective like measures before?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
So part of my astral travel experience is I've done the Munro Institute's astral projection course, whatever you call it. And within that, it sets you up with a lot of really good things that you can do to put your thoughts aside and to do like a vibrational breathing so that, or humming, so that you're clearing yourself, and then you put a shield of protection around you of white light. And so like little things that you have to do before you even lift off. So I just do those because I've done them for so long that I find them really effective. So I just keep doing them.
They work for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
As a little kid, I could have crazy dreams and control them and it was great. But yeah, I haven't been able to do that for ages. But quite often, a lot lately, I was just texting Shannon the other day that I don't know where I go, but I wake up exhausted most mornings.
Yeah.
So I need to get on that, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah. Or listening to binaural beats, because that harmonizes both sides of your brain to work in harmony so that you can lift off and your brain can reach the, I think it's the delta state. Don't quote me on that, but it's a state of the brain where you can actually achieve these experiences and then have total recall of it. So binaural beats helps you achieve that.
Right. Fascinating. Honestly, we could speak about this forever.
I know, this could be an episode just on astral travel. And it's funny, when Laura texted me, I was like, you need to ask Rhiannon to like get in touch. I know she does a lot of astral travel, and so that's funny.
Yeah, she's out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Just call me into your dreams, I'll help you.
Yeah.
You'll be off somewhere else.
Well, I used to, with a friend, I used to, like, we'd plan our night and then go, okay, well, I'm going to be in this location. Can you meet me there?
Wow.
And it wouldn't always work, but, I mean, we tried.
Yeah.
A lot.
You should probably do that again. Like, it's fun little challenges. I don't know. I get dopamine from, like, okay, I'm going to do this thing. Or one time I tried to astral project into Hawaii, because Hawaii is my favorite place.
Mm.
And so I was using this, like moisturizer that I have from Hawaii to use on me to like take me there. And I could feel that I was walking down the main street of Waikiki, and it was amazing.
Wow.
And I love that, but I haven't been able to get back there. And I even wore my pearl necklace that I got from there. Like, I was tag locking the whole thing.
Yeah. Like,
what can I do to get me in Hawaii? Cause it was during COVID as well. So there was no flights anywhere. But it worked. That was it felt good, whether I'm delusional or it's actually a thing.
Hey, it's a win-win, baby.
Exactly.
Yeah. Who's to say what's actually real and what's not? That's
exactly.
All,
nothing exists anyway. It's all
I agree.
Illusion.
It is.
And the more you look into things, the more you're like, I don't fucking know anything anymore.
Exactly.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Rhiannon, for our lovely podcast coven that want to look at all the things that you have on offer, do you have anything brewing that you'd like to share with our podcast coven, and how can everyone connect with you and your beautiful magic knowledge?
Well, I feel like my answer is always the same. I've always got things brewing because I'm in a constant state of creation. But at the moment, I'm creating like witchy stickers for 2024, which started off as a passion project because I couldn't find what I needed. Then I realized that there was like this massive gap in the market for this. But like aside from that, just, I don't know, lots of different things. Just like if you want to find out, follow me on social media.
Yeah.
And then I also teach magic on Patreon, and I've got the shop here in Southurst Hall.
Mm-hmm. And we will include all those links to all your various sites in the show notes attached to this episode. Just scroll down.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute delight to connect with you again and talk about all the things. Mm-hmm. And as Laura said, we could talk to you for literally hours. And we definitely have to get you back on the podcast in the new year, mm-hmm. because we do have a subject up our sleeves that we've been talking about. So
I know, I'm excited for it.
Yes, I think it'll be good.
I feel a lot more equipped.
Yeah.
Coming into it.
And draw you up to some Asher Moon studio space sometime.
Yeah. We'd love to actually, even though we feel like we know you, but, you know, to actually see you in person would be amazing.
I agree. I should just make the effort.
We don't actually live that far away. So to drive from where we are to where you are is maybe an hour 20.
Okay.
That's but we haven't done it yet.
Yeah, we haven't done it either. So,
exactly.
Well, you went to Canberra.
We did.
Yeah, we did.
Sprung.
We really do need to come and see your shop, that's for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. We will.
Yeah,
we will.
Make it happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Always a pleasure, never a chore.
And for our podcast coven, we will be back with you next week.
Bye.